This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kanasan joining us over the miracle that is technology. How are you both doing this morning? It's a lovely Monday, 6 o'clock in the morning.
It is. Yeah, it's been a pretty good weekend, actually. Just chilling. A little bit better because we all can go out, actually.
Did Xiaoning just say chilling?
Chill. I know.
Did she actually just say just chilling? Something's wrong. There's a disturbance in the force. Xiaoning, are you okay? Do you have a temperature?
No, well, my idea of chilling and your idea of chilling are two different things, right? Yeah, so it's all relative, okay? Chilling for
my
me.
My weekend was okay. I had chili pan mee after aeons and aeons. The shop isn't open yet. We went and bought it back, but it was still great. It was awesome. I really missed it. I didn't realize how much I missed chili pan mee.
Yeah.
But it was a nice weekend. Nothing too much to shout about.
So I had quite an all right weekend too. And actually, I went for a walk for the very first time in, I think, 3 months. So, you know, it's
amazing.
It's quite amazing. I felt very refreshed for all the 5 minutes that I was actually out of doors. So this morning, though, we do have quite a number of things lined up to keep you company as you stick around with us from 6 to 10 a.m. So in this next hour or so, what do we have on the agenda, Roshan?
Right, so I've got a little bit of not bad news, but it's over the weekends we've seen what's happened in the US, the protests that have turned into riots and looting, and it's just disorder across the country. And this comes off the back of COVID-19, what has really been just a lack of leadership from the top. So we'll be taking a look at that, breaking down what's happened, and giving you some news on that part. Not the happiest of things, but something that we should all be paying attention to, and can happen anywhere.
And I'll be talking about weddings, something I have no experience in at all. And at the rate I'm going, also likely to have no experience at all.
All right. So weddings in the new normal. If you want to weigh in on those conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be taking a look at how remote working could change the demand for housing. So be sure to stay tuned for that after some music. Here's When Love and Hate Collide by Def Leppard, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kanasan. It's 6:07 a.m. Monday, the 1st of June. And today we're taking a look at the subject of housing because, you know, as a lot more people turn towards remote work, and I think a lot of companies come to the realization that remote working, you know, it does get the job done.
Some of the time.
The question is whether or not this is going to change the existing demand for housing. So the Wall Street Journal has an article looking at the fact that, you know, remote working could spark housing boom in suburbs as well as smaller cities if people don't necessarily need to travel to their workplace. Now, Xiaoning, knowing that you are the kind of person that moves to be closer to her workplace, and you've done this several times, would remote working allow you to be a little bit freer in your housing choices?
Yeah, it would. But I think for me, it's not what this pandemic has taught me is that, and I'm one of the fortunate ones, I was glad I didn't live in a tiny apartment. So I think the other trend that we might see is one, people moving to the suburbs. Two, you might opt for bigger spaces and further out rather than smaller spaces nearer your work because A, like you said, you may not need to be near work. And you know, when there was at the height of our lockdown, we weren't really leaving our houses at all, right? We just went out to buy groceries. That was it. Some of us worked. And for a lot of people, I think I had friends who thought they were going balmy, honestly, in their tiny 750 square foot apartment, but they didn't have a choice. So some people might think, okay, you know, I would sell this 750 square foot. I would, you know, swap it for a bigger unit and I'll be willing to be further out there anyway, since I might be working remotely. I don't need to drive into work anymore. It's okay because in the past, people used to take 1 hour to commute, right?
What about you, Roshan? Would remote working change the way you look at housing?
It'll definitely change the way I work and live. But I think it's called the distributed workforce, right? We have companies who are doing that. Essentially, you operate online digitally. I think it would change my options. But you see, it's not really, I mean, it's nice being close to work. But for me, it's actually more important to be close to family and friends. So that's going to be the biggest barometer for where I eventually want to stay, right? Working from home is great in the sense that it gives you a bit more flexibility of not having to do those daily commutes. But I'm also kind of that person who's used to having people in the house. So if I'm living, I'm not going to go and live all the way in like Seremban, not yet anyway. But it is something I'm definitely curious of, especially when it all comes down to really prices of housing, right? Mm-hmm. If you can get something cheaper and bigger further out and you don't have to go to work every day, I don't see why not. And maybe you create new communities outside of the Klang Valley, which has really been a chokehold for all of everyone coming into here and living and bringing up the prices of houses, right? So if I look at my parents, my mom's from Penang, my dad's from Kuantan, they didn't live in the Klang Valley, but they moved away. So maybe it's time for the young people to move away to other places and hopefully bring down the prices of housing in the Klang Valley.
I mean, this is only possible if companies really pursue this work from home strategy seriously and not just during this pandemic, right? So, you know, we don't know if a vaccine happens, will offices require everyone to go back to work? Another trend, and this is just my own little friend bubble, I will call it, some of them are thinking of moving out of their apartments into houses because they feel they have better control when it's a house versus apartments where there's communal space. And then they're nervous about touching lifts and, going into like shared spaces. I don't know whether that's really going to be a trend, you know, where people think landed is better than high rise because there's too much sharing of space. I think, you know, it's early days yet. We will have to see. But this is a plug for our property show. We have considered these topics. We had two shows. I mean, one of which is The Real Estate Needs to Adapt. And that's with George Chimmel. I think he's the executive chairman of QYIQI. Another one we also had was the Malaysian Property Landscape Post-COVID-19 with Sukarna Subramaniam, who's the MD of Knight Frank. Do listen to these podcasts, which are available on the BFM app or on Spotify. And they do discuss some of the trends going forward and also maybe where property prices are really going to end up.
Yeah, so this is an interesting subject, right? Particularly because we're all faced with a new normal right now. And it's whether or not this new normal is going to continue into 2021, 2022. What parts of this pandemic behavior will carry through into the rest of our lives, even once COVID-19 is no longer a concern. So, you know, for me, I think the ability to remote work is actually quite an attraction. And it would be an attraction in any job I was looking at, say if I was hunting for a job during 2021, for example, because I think the paranoia of, you know, being stuck in a crowded space or crowded office is probably going to hold for quite a while more. But it also means that, you know, If you've only got, say, a couple hundred thousand, and this would get you a shoebox in the middle of crowded areas like Petaling Jaya or even, you know, Kuala Lumpur. But the ability to remote work means that that money is going to stretch a lot further if you, say, look at places like Seremban or look further into the suburbs. So it's going to be an interesting sort of situation. I, for one, wouldn't mind remote working more if it meant that I could afford a larger place, even if it was further away from my workplace. Because, I mean, as is, right now, I commute about, 20 kilometres to work on a daily basis. So, you know.
But at 5 o'clock in the morning, it takes like no time at all, right?
I didn't always come to work at 5 o'clock in the morning, Xiaoning. I've spent 4 hours in traffic jams going
home. Yeah, we have heard your stories about going
horror
home.
Stories.
Yeah. We're like, hey, you could have driven to Ipoh, ate some kuay teow and came back, you know?
I easily could have, you know? So, hey, no more traffic jams in my life. That sounds great to me.
But I'm just curious which kind of, you know, if we try and look more in the medium and long term, what companies will realistically do? Because at the end of the day, what our decisions in terms of housing is very much driven by, of course, our income levels and the jobs we do and where we do it. So, you know, it's a kind of a multifaceted kind of a question that we don't really have an answer to at this moment.
Not yet, no.
Yeah, and I think that's always it, right? So for, I mean, what has it been, a decade now? We've seen prices elevate, you know, higher and higher as developers look at the $1 million, the million ringgit properties. No one's really paying attention to that below 500,000 ringgit. And this has changed, right? Actually, I've heard some developers from my circle of influence anyway, that they've cut prices because they want to make sales. And they've cut prices significantly in some areas like Ayer Damansara to make those sales. And that's what we're going to have to see. Some developers are going to have to take a haircut if they want to sell units. I think we're already seeing an overhang, which of course we've covered on the property show, on the morning run in totality. The overhang is a big issue that needs to be tackled. And the only way you really tackle that is demand, supply, obey the curves of demand, supply and bring down the prices.
I'm just curious going forward how developers will plan future projects. That's going to be interesting. Right? Because we've had so many trends. We had the $1 million property trend in KLCC. Then we had the super small apartment trends to make absolute prices lower. What's the new trend in COVID-19?
Well, let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Would you move further away to buy a home if you were allowed to remote work? Tell us what you think. Right now, we have some messages for you. And then up next, looking at weddings in the new normal. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. This is The Morning Run with Lynn, Shaoning and Roshan. That was The Black Keys with Lonely Boy. And if COVID-19 has kept you waiting, much like the singer's love has, you know, the question now is, how are weddings going to proceed in this new normal? So the Wall Street Journal has an article looking at how, you know, postponed weddings are getting back on, but getting a marriage license turns out not to be easy, because in New York, the demand for this virtual marriage license application system, which is only a few weeks old, has fast outstripped the actual ability of the system to keep up. I think at one point they were seeing 4,000 license applications a day, compared to the 40 they were equipped to handle. So the question is now, you know, with people reluctant to spend time amidst large congregations, how are weddings going to proceed?
Well, in Malaysia, they have been, because Selangor and the Federal Territory allow online Muslim weddings, but not other states. Now, this is an article I see on CNA, and it's apparently, but it's written on the 2nd of May. They said that as of last Monday, so that would have been, you know, early May, first week of May, Jais had approved 13 out of 364 applications received, according to the Selangor government official.
13?
Yeah, 13 out of 364. So just like in New York, or is it US, there's a backlog of applications and only 13 couples managed to get their wedding done. But that was in May. And they still need some requirements. So, you know, because you still need witnesses. And it's all very strange, because I saw this article and it's like done via Zoom.
Yeah, that's very
strange. Or whatever online kind of thing, you know.
My question, the more important question I personally feel, is how are wedding parties going to be like going forward? Like, really, are we going to have like 10 people in a room separated by 2 meters? What's that going to look like? How is organizing a wedding going to be? I know a lot of friends who've had to cancel their weddings, which is really sad. Some of them the deposit is in no man's land at this point, because businesses are tough and then they also have their own cash flow issues. That's one thing. But I have some friends, I know some people who are a bit happy about the situation, because that means they don't have to deal with big weddings and they have scaled down immensely the planning, which I guess really begs that you have to start looking at your guest list and be like, are you important enough to bring to this wedding? Or like, if you only can have 20 people in a room, who are these 20 people going to be? I think that's going to be very interesting. I think the family politics that plays out from something like this is going to be, you could make some TV shows out of it. Let's just put it that way.
I think it'll be fascinating. I mean, okay, you know, a wedding is not going to be happening for me in the foreseeable future. But, you know, putting myself in the position of people who are now reviewing their guest lists, COVID-19 gives you a great excuse not to invite that really awful aunt whom you're only inviting to please the rest of your family. Right? Because you can say, oh yeah, you know, COVID-19 is a little bit dangerous. We don't want to put you in a tough position to wanting to refuse the offer to come to my wedding. So yeah, it's, I mean, I think it will force a lot of people to pare down, and they'll also pare down expectations, which is not exactly a bad thing, because in a lot of cases, you know, Asian family and culture, weddings are more for the extended family rather than for the bride and groom themselves.
I mean, different people are motivated by different things, but I have friends who wanted that ultimate
this is true.
Big wedding, right? And they turned out to be bridezillas. And they had that poofy marshmallow dress and the full works, you know, and four dress changes.
Wait, hold on. The laugh. That laugh, Shaoning, was very pointed. It was like, no. Yeah, I noticed.
No, they had the marshmallow dress. They had four wedding dress changes. They had the full works, the photo shoot in Japan, photo shoot in Europe, you know, all these things. And yeah, for some of them, this is their dream, and I'm sad for them because, you know, they can't have it. And for some people, they're gleeful because they think, ha, this is the perfect excuse. I can just have a tiny little wedding, save some money, not deal with any relatives or painful friends.
You can tell which one I am, right?
Yeah, well, it depends, I guess, which camp you're in. But for the couples who are looking forward to it or who were looking forward to wedding, my heart does go out to them. And we also had this conversation on BFM, the daily check-in, weddings during the MCO with our ex-BFMer, Ayman Rashid, who was supposed to get married during that period. So you can listen to that about an actual account of what happened, you know, how you are personally affected, because everybody, you know, put some money in and, you know, I'm sorry, this couple put their money in, they wanted it back. What does it mean? So, yeah, we can talk about it and be very, you know, laugh about it. For some couples, it really was quite painful.
I have a wedding story that can top yours, Shaoning. I know I went to a wedding where the bride arrived in a horse-drawn carriage. So that was my level of amazing wedding that I've been to. But do let us know what you think. What might weddings in this new normal look like? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have the 6:30 news bulletin coming up for you. But first, here is Billy Joel with You May Be Right, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wong Shaoning and Roshan Kanesan. It's 6:39 a.m, Monday the 1st of June. And over the weekend, I think what has been dogging the international news is the unrest in the US. Because cities across that country, from Minneapolis, Minnesota, to Los Angeles, to New York, Chicago, and Washington, D.C., have been seeing protests and demonstrations because violence erupted following the death of George Floyd, a black Minneapolis man who died after a white police officer pressed a knee into his neck for more than 8 minutes.
Now, I mean, this police brutality, right, has been an ongoing problem for many in the US, which created, I think, what is now known as the Black Lives Movement in 2013. Now, Floyd's death actually brought a renewed outpouring of such anguish over the inequality. Now, the chaos amid otherwise peaceful protests struck as the economy struggles to emerge from this coronavirus enforced hibernation. So what's happened, and it has actually had an impact somewhat on the economy, because today we have announcements from CVS, which is like the big pharmaceutical drugstore chain in the US, and even Target, announcing that they are closing stores because they can't ensure the safety of their workers at these stores. So this includes not just in Minneapolis, but also in locations such as New York.
Yeah, I mean, this has been, it's been quite depressing to see what's happening there. And you see the visuals, the video is disturbing, to say the very least. And you look at the situation there. This is what were protests that turned into riots and looting and all of that. But it's the domino effect, right? It's one after the other. Things start falling. And then you create, you have an environment that was already tense, to say the least. COVID-19 and quarantine all doesn't help the situation.
40 million Americans unemployed.
Unemployment is high. And already you have these racial tensions that have been going on for a long time. And then you have leadership that is just tone deaf, or refuses to acknowledge certain things, doesn't come up. At this point, the US president should be coming up to talk to the nation from the White House. Where is that? He hasn't done it. Why hasn't he done this? Any leader worth his salt should be doing it. And that immediately sends a signal to the rest of the nation and the world that what are you doing? Like, it's, so there is that. And it is it's a bad situation for everybody. But this movement, now has turned into something ugly, and it is masking the reason for the protest, and I think that's very sad.
Yeah, I mean, Donald Trump did come out to address the people over social media. So he did. He made his statements as he does through his social media account. But I think what is at least somewhat encouraging in this entire, you know, miserable situation over the George Floyd's death is that the police officer who has been charged in the wake of his death was charged with third degree murder, second degree manslaughter, I think, which could see sentences of up to 20 years, depending on the judge's discretion. And it was one of the fastest processed and charged cases, I think, that the city had seen in quite a while because of the unrest and the massive amount of attention that's been placed on this case. So hopefully we start to see some kind of result, and we start to see this movement. I mean, on a personal basis, I would actually like to see the US actually make strides to address this issue, because every couple of months we see another of these protests, another of the revival of the Black Lives Matter movement. Why do we even have this movement in the first place? It just shows how much we absolutely need it. But in some other international news as well, you know, on Saturday, SpaceX became the first private company to actually send human beings into space. So SpaceX's rocket took two NASA astronauts to the International Space Station from the Florida Kennedy Space Center. It was the first launch of American astronauts from U.S. soil since the U.S. space shuttle program ended in 2011.
I just find it kind of strange, you know, the whole world is in a kind of a disarray, but the space program kind of still continues, right? You know, as in, things like this still go on, but I guess life has to go on. So SpaceX founder Elon Musk said that hopefully this is the first step on a journey towards civilization on Mars. So yeah, hopefully we don't take the pandemic with us when we do get eventually to Mars.
Oh, I was thinking, you know, if the pandemic wipes out half the population on Earth, the rest of us can just go and live on Mars.
Okay, that sounds like a real science fi movie. But
are we writing a future dystopian movie here? I mean, we were talking about, I mean, yeah, but this is, I mean, Speaking of stories, I've actually coincidentally just started watching Space Force, which is a very, I find quite funny show starring Steve Carell, and it's on Netflix right now. It's talking about this, right? The U.S. Separate branch of military called Space Force that is tasked with basically protecting the U.S. interests in space. There is a lot of U.S. interest. There's a lot of private interest, as we've seen with Elon Musk SpaceX launching this into space. I wonder where this goes from here, right? Because we always tout this as a big deal, the technological innovation that comes out from this. How does this play out? Now, obviously, Elon Musk has his own motivations for doing this, like Mars. However realistic that is, that's a different question. But
you make it sound like Elon Musk wants to own Mars.
I mean, that's what all billionaires want to do, right? Own things that other people can't own.
He wants to commercialize everything, right?
Yeah, I want to see whether the technological spin-off happens from this. So this is the first thing the US has done from their side of the world, on their soil, since 2011. This is a big deal. And whether this reinvigorates the emphasis on science and technology and development, that's not just Silicon Valley technological, digitally based, I think that would be very powerful for America if they can tap into this.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see that the space race is happening once again, but it looks like Elon Musk has come out on top, because SpaceX was not the only commercial space program that was in the works. I think there was also Virgin Galactic. And didn't Jeff Bezos also have an outfit?
Yeah, but the winners in this are actually the Russians, because if you have the money, they can take you to space. After all, our Malaysian astronaut went on the Russians' shuttle, didn't he? So yeah, at the moment, the Russians are the ones who dominate. So maybe that's why, you know, President Trump is like, I want to be on top too, even in space.
Well, let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up for you. And then after that, we're going to be taking a look at the front pages of our newspapers this morning. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Skin and Bone by Heartless Bastards, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Shaning and Roshan Kanisen. Now it's 6:52 a.m, Monday the 1st of June, and we're taking a look at the papers today. So that I've got the New Straits Times in front of me, and their headline is America in Chaos. Now we were just talking a little bit about this, about the protests that have swept several cities across the US after George Floyd was reported dead following, and the video of his detainment by police was also released. So that is the front page of the New Straits Times, accompanied by quite a frightening picture of what looks to be protesters having set something rather large on fire. I'm not really sure what it is at this point.
Yeah, the pictures in, if you watch the news, are quite alarming. I mean, you see buildings or rows of buildings actually being burned down. For me, as you all know, I like the Singapore Straits Times. And the headline, well, one of the headlines is, Singapore agrees to further extend KL-Singapore high-speed rail project suspension till December 31st at Malaysia's request. Now, you know, this is the project that just goes on and on and on and on, but never seems to be built. Guess what? It's going on and on again, but hopefully till 31st of December. So, you know, they've agreed to suspend it for 7 months till year end. I think then we'll have a look. I mean, both sides, at least the Malaysian government, will decide whether to proceed, because I think the Malaysian government has already delayed this more than once. Cost is a big issue, mm-hmm. right? Whether this project makes economic sense in the first place.
Absolutely. So, Roshan Kanisen, what do you have in front of you as well this morning?
Well, I don't have access to the physical papers, but I have access to the Star e-paper. And on the front page, sorry about that, back to school in stages is the main headline in blue. But at the bottom of the page, a big picture about America's rift widening there. Again, we've talked about this throughout the earlier in the day, in the morning. But right now, this back to school in stages story is basically about parents being concerned, even if schools do reopen, parents being concerned about sending kids back to school unless the situation is completely safe. And students start with older ones returning. It comes up to staggering, I guess. But this is, I guess, a parallel that we can draw to anything, right? Cinemas. Would you go back to cinemas? Would you go back to restaurants? Would you go back to the mall? These are all things that are going to be, people are going to be concerned. And there are going to be different groups of people who have varying degrees of concern. And how do we encourage them back into life, into the real world, I guess. So that's the Star's front page. But if you open that front page and you look inside, it's all politics, including the HSR postponement, as Shaning mentions. But it really all stems from Bersatu politics over the weekend. Lots of happenings there that we'll be covering actually later in the show. So don't have to spend too much time on that.
Now, I also have the Malaysian Reserve in front of me, and their headline, I mean, on the sidebar, they also have curfews and clashes as race protests escalate in the US. But their main story is retail investors fueling a mini bull market, because it appears that despite the scourge of the COVID-19 pandemic, trading volume and value at Bursa Malaysia are hitting new highs in the last few weeks. And the moratoriums that were announced on loan payments and reduced provident fund deductions have also put additional cash into people's purses. So apparently some people have turned into punters. And you know what? My grandmother has become a punter, because she's still an active trader at nearly 80 years old. And she's been really excited over the past few days over opportunities on Bursa Malaysia.
Which makes me a little bit worried. But which is also the Edge weekly headline. The big disconnect, because we do know that first quarter 2020 earnings of listed companies disappointed. But yet, on the flip side, the FBM KLCI has rebounded by 20.9% since March. And the Edge Weekly asked, will this divergence continue? Because at the end of the day, it's down to valuations, right? Some people joke, and this is a joke, that says that because you can't buy 4D, you can't gamble, these people have shifted to the stock market. I don't know. But, you know, euphoria is always a bit scary when it comes back to markets, but it's also a function of just a lot of liquidity in the system. I mean, interest rates are at all-time low. Look at the US, not any better than us.
Yeah, but you know, when you look at how far the glove makers have gone alone, right? Any report that you read, any research report that I read previously, all had target prices of 10 ringgit or something like that or higher. And it's a very temporary thing, right? Because the minute we have a vaccine for COVID, this bubble may burst. And it's also just whether it's too much money going in at all one go.
What's certainly not a joke, though, looking at the Malay Mail lead story, is petty traders staring at ruin as COVID-19 and MCO lay waste to businesses. But that is all that we have for you from the front pages of the papers this morning, because we're about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin and then the serious end of the morning run. But first, here is Darlin' by the Beach Boys, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.